Did you know the benefits of nature's most powerful superfood are universal and always available no matter what your age? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a nutritional supplement I recommend and use that's clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function, eliminate harmful pathogens and fight infection, and cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. It's Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. With Sovereign's proprietary enhanced delivery system, Colostrum LD is the most effective colostrum available. Colostrum LD has wide-ranging health benefits at every stage of life. To order, just go to SovereignLaboratories.com. That's SovereignLaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to SovereignLaboratories.com for Colostrum LD. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And here we are once again. It's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which for many of you, you consider it our most popular feature. We have many podcasts with interviews and clinical focus segments on particular health issues. But for many of you, this potpourri, this smorgasbord of health questions is a perennial popular podcast. And with us today, of course, capably assisting me, Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. Each week, we tackle questions that you send us. You can send them to radioprogram@AOL.com, and you never know what questions our audience will pose. It's always interesting. And so how are you, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And okay, so summer officially launched. And,
yes.
I got my official first tan of the summer. It was kind of a cloudy, overcast day, but in the shelter of the lee of my house, I managed to get a few minutes of sun, hazy kind of filtered sun, and I turned pink.
No doubt, you've got a good dose of vitamin D.
Yes, and I felt good. I mean, I felt energized. I felt good because I've been sort of in vitamin D deprivation when it comes to sun exposure. So, before we get to questions, let's tackle the big elephant in the room. The elephant in the room this week is news that, get this, vitamins are worthless. Once again, it's been demonstrated conclusively by researchers that vitamins are a waste of time. And I'll read you some of the headlines. This is a random survey of headlines from the media. Researchers find most vitamins and minerals don't lower risk of cardiovascular disease. This one, most popular vitamin and mineral supplements provide no health benefits. This one, your multivitamins aren't helping you live longer. Study reveals stark truth about vitamin supplements.
Okay, you know what's frightening me right now?
What's frightening you?
What's frightening me right now is that all of this has been cherry-picked.
Yep.
It's as if they have blinders on, and they are not even acknowledging the reams of scientific research that show all the benefits of taking your vitamins. Uh-huh. In primary prevention, in secondary prevention, yep. In long life, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look at the study in question. Okay. And by the way, this is this is kind of a periodic theme that haunts us in the supplement world. Is studies come up from time to time. Which show that one or another combination of supplements doesn't achieve statistical significance in a study protocol or a medical meta-analysis. And hence, the conclusion is that vitamins and supplements are a waste of time. Now, first of all, before we even look at the study in question, Let's keep in mind that the scope of the study is actually rather narrow. The scope of the study is restricted to just looking at the impact of supplements on cardiovascular disease. So when we are talking about cardiovascular disease, you know, we're talking about we're talking about stroke, heart attack, and so on. And, you know, the need for bypass surgery, the need for stents, that's what most of these studies address. And so this is a meta-analysis, okay? And this is a meta-analysis that looks at a variety of studies that are what are called RCTs, randomized controlled trials.
Yeah, the gold standard.
Supposedly the gold standard. So before I even, you know, looked at this study in detail, I was, you may consider me sort of a science nerd, but, you know, I was on vacation, I had a couple of, you know, days of leisure and downtime. And I sat there and I looked at the literature about nutrition being studied through RCTs, randomized controlled trials. So randomized controlled trials tend to be trials that are double-blind placebo-controlled trials where they take one or another medicine or nutrient and they study it in isolation. And it usually, by virtue of the fact that these studies are hard to do, they're done for a relatively short time. You know, they may be done for a year or two at most. Not usually more than 5 years. And in looking at the literature about this, this is uniquely unsuited to looking at the effects of nutrition. Because, you know, when you nutrition, we really have to look at from a whole standpoint. We can't just say, well, vitamin D, you know, vitamin E, beta carotene, vitamin C. It really is hard to isolate this. And also the short time span in these studies limits our ability to draw conclusions about the efficacy of supplements. So in the study in question, what they found was that there was no benefit to any of the vitamins and supplements, except that there was a benefit to some of the vitamins. Particularly, but... So, I mean, if you really look at the study, I mean, you really actually look at the study, you look behind the headline, there was a benefit to the use of folate. Actually, in this case, folic acid, you know, because none of the studies looked at high-quality vitamins, number one. So they all looked at, you look at things like Centrum, you know, which is kind of a crappy vitamin. There's no great benefit to taking Centrum. And, you know, sort of, yeah, it's poor, sort of low-dose, relatively poor quality supplements using not mixed carotenoids, using beta carotene in some studies.
Only using D-alpha tocopherol or something.
You're looking at synthetic vitamin E and not mixed tocopherol, rich in gamma tocopherol. And so what they actually found is that there was a benefit in terms of cardiovascular disease of taking folic acid and B12, because the study found folic acid alone and B vitamins with folic acid may reduce cardiovascular disease and stroke. So within the study, there was actually a glimmer of positivity. What's interesting is, though, in this particular study, niacin showed a very small negative effect. And that's interesting because niacin is often thought to be a cardiovascular protectant. It lowers cholesterol. We think, okay, that's good. But in this study, it didn't pay off. And I actually have to say that I don't use niacin anymore because I think, although it lowers cholesterol, there's not a lot of good studies that show that it reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease. You know, I think that niacin is kind of passe. It's kind of a 1970s thing, 1980s thing. But, you know, in the 21st century, niacin is, I think, going to be less popular as a cardiovascular disease protectant.
It's interesting that they find folic acid because you and I, we know the mechanism. It's likely lowering homocysteine.
Exactly, exactly.
So,
and here's an interesting sub-finding in the study. They commented that some studies have found that vitamin B12 is not beneficial for cardiovascular disease. Now, you might say, well, but B12 helps to lower homocysteine. Why isn't it beneficial? The reason was that in many studies, they looked at patients with kidney disease, and what they found is that cyanocobalamin, the cheap form of vitamin B12, most generic vitamins with B12 have cyanocobalamin in them, it actually overaccumulates in sick patients with renal disease, with renal failure. And so they suggested that we now, and thank you very much for saying this, this is something I've done, you know, 5-8 years ago, we moved to methylcobalamin as our preferred source of B12. Well, hey, that's something that I did when I, you know, modified my foundation formula, my multi, and many other supplement companies that are, you know, really high-end, you know, physician brand multivitamins now contain methylcobalamin instead of cyanocobalamin. So, you know, I think, you know, we'll have to look at the study in some greater detail and maybe break it down and do an entire analysis. Maybe you and I can task ourselves with that. It's hard to turn on a dime with a study like this because you really want to look at it and also talk to some of the other experts in the field who are experts at statistical analysis and, you know, some of the shenanigans that sometimes are pulled in studies to advance some predetermined finding, which is that supplements are worthless.
Yes. For somebody with an agenda. And then going further, you know, then the media, you know, we could offer them some help in doing a more correct headline, such as some B vitamins shown helpful to reduce risk of cardiovascular disease,
it could well have been
worthless.
It could well have been. The other thing is that some people are editorializing on this, and many of the stories get quotes from doctors who probably are already they're already foes of vitamin supplementation who say, you know, people shouldn't waste their money on supplements. Instead, they should pour that money into eating healthy food. Well, you know, our listeners and constituents of the supplement industry, I think the vast majority of them aren't just taking supplements and eating a crappy diet. You know, there may be some people who do that. You know, they eat a crappy diet and they take supplements as kind of an insurance policy because they know they're not eating well. But I think the vast majority, certainly of our patients and our listeners, are people who spend an inordinate amount of their resources and income on really healthy food, make healthy lifestyle choices, use, you know, chemical-free cosmetics, and so on and so on. And also, you know, actually consecrate some resources towards taking really high-quality vitamins and are selective. The other thing about it, I will just... You know, I don't want to go too long on this subject because we want to answer questions, is they didn't look at extraordinary nutrients. They didn't look at things like alpha lipoic acid. In this study, they did not look at they didn't look at fish oil. They didn't look at some of the things like resveratrol. They didn't look at some of the more promising nutrients like coenzyme Q10, for example. So, you know, they're sort of casting a broad brush when they study Centrum and, you know, cheap, forms of calcium. Or in this case, magnesium. By the way, magnesium was part of the analysis, but I'm not even sure what quality the magnesium supplements were.
And
what dosage were used.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was just going to get to, Dr. Hoffman, is often these studies, they contain doses which are not optimal, which are not a therapeutic dose, but oftentimes just a little more than the RDA, which means, yeah, you won't suffer a deficiency, but it's certainly not an optimal dose to help lower a risk factor for something. So,
And finally, you know, the authors acknowledge that their methodology, the randomized controlled trials, it has limited the ability to draw conclusions about the efficacy of supplements because, you know, randomized controlled trials are inherently not that well suited to looking at things that take years and decades to develop. So the preventive benefits in terms of cardiovascular disease may involve taking 5, 10, 15, 20 years of supplements to achieve those benefits.
A randomized controlled trial is not the best way to look, especially at these single nutrient experiments. Better off would be observational, maybe case control studies.
Exactly. That's what they
say. And even throwing in anecdotal in there too. It is beneficial for the practitioner to see, for example, when you give somebody with a high homocysteine level, MethylGuard Plus, and you recheck their homocysteine and it's dropped from a 17 to a 10. Wow. And we see that over and over and over and over again over many years. This is something that needs to be taken into consideration as a therapy.
So they say the weaknesses included our lack of consideration of data from the results from cohort studies. Randomized controlled trials are often of shorter duration, whereas cohorts of longer duration might be required to fully capture chronic disease risk. And by the way, participants in randomized controlled trials are often more health conscious, and therefore they were not representative of the general population. So that's a bit of a bias that's inherent in these types of studies, because, you know, you may not see, these are people who are already proactive because they're going to join a randomized control trial.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That brings the question of randomness, but all right, we're digressing enough.
Yeah, good. All right.
Okay.
I just don't want to, you know, again, the question is, what impact will this have on people who are inveterate takers of supplements? I think there might be some people who are on the borderline about taking supplements who might be dissuaded from taking supplements, but the vast majority of people who already take supplements, I think, are convinced of their benefits. And, part of our mission statement in Intelligent Medicine is to provide people with information about studies that support the use of supplements. So keep listening. And we'll keep providing that information.
Yes. Okay, we have an email from Jerry. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm hoping you can provide me some guidance with what is a very difficult problem to solve. My diabetic father, he's in his mid-80s. He's been diagnosed with GERD. And he's also done some testing, and he's been told that his esophagus really isn't moving the food down very well, and that perhaps the sphincter, the lower esophageal sphincter, is not closing properly. He's on 40 milligrams of acid blockers a day. Is there any help for him?
Okay. So this is a common problem, which is that the sphincter, which is this kind of ring of muscular tissue that separates the stomach from the esophagus, it gets flabby and lax. And it's kind of like a, you know, stretched out old sock. And a complicating factor here is that this guy he's older and he has diabetes. And in diabetes, he might be suffering from a form of autonomic nerve paralysis called gastroparesis. You know, the nerves get affected in diabetes, and gastroparesis is common in long-standing diabetics. So it might be a bit of both. You know, it's a motility problem. Things just don't go down. And part of it may be anatomical. So what they do is sometimes what's called a Nissen fundoplication. I'm not sure how anxious they are to do it in a 80-plus individual who has diabetes, who might be a poor surgical risk. But what they do is they tighten up that ring. That surgery, I found, is kind of iffy. You know, we really much prefer to try virtually everything before we need that kind of surgery, you know, dietary approaches and so on.
True. That surgery we've seen in some of our younger patients without great, without much success,
So, if it's anatomical, I'm not sure that there's any vitamins or supplements or a dietary approach that could make a difference. It's worth a try, sometimes with, the recommendations that we make for GERD, you know, and put the person on the GERD diet, and, maybe give them some, you know, if they're experiencing heartburn, give them DGL or give them Endofen. There's some studies that suggest that taking, phosphatidylcholine, which is a precursor to acetylcholine, can help a little bit with tightening up that in the muscles in the in that sphincter. That is possible. Any other ideas on that?
That and really the I have to harp on diet a little bit. At the very least, the avoidance of acidity, spicy foods, things like chocolate, coffee, tea, raw onions, raw garlic, broccoli, bananas, oatmeal. There's a long list of people who do better avoiding these particular foods who have GERD, and that can be helpful. Beyond that, I'm hoping that Jerry's father is already on a diabetic diet, but we don't know that. And he actually says here in his email that he's not 100% sure that he's compliant on this type of a diet because he's from an era that believes that food doesn't play much of a role in how you feel. You know, that's interesting because the foods were better back then.
Yeah.
The foods were simply better quality.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 60, 70, 80 years ago or so. But, yeah. But here we are. That's a tough one, Jerry. Yeah.
Indeed.
And, yeah. Yeah, but for any discomfort, DGL, Endofin, taking 2 tablespoons in water twice daily in between meals can be very, very beneficial.
Yep. Yeah. And by the way, you know, hear about these sometimes esoteric-sounding products, you can go to drhoffman.com, click on the store. Drop-down menu will take you to FullScript, and that's where you can order products like Endofin and DGL. Some of the products are products that we prescribe to our very own patients, and also there are physician brands there that are not generally available through normal retail channels.
Right. Okay. We've got a question here from Jean. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, do you have any recommendations for very thin skin in the elderly? My mother is an active and fit 90-year-old whose skin on her lower legs has become very thin and tears easily. Are there recommendations to prevent this from happening in the first place? Oh, yeah. This can be a tough one in the elderly.
Yeah,
I think you need a lifetime of use of things like vitamin C and Biosil and things like that. But, you know, somebody in their 90s, that's a little tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, things that help. Well, first of all, there's a natural process of the skin thinning as you age. And that's just the degradation of the collagen that is part of aging. And that's also why wrinkles occur. Also, it is hormonal to some extent, and it's a greater tendency in women than in men, so it's of interest that this is a woman. What tends to make you have thicker skin, testosterone and other androgens like DHEA. Now, that's why men are said to be thicker skinned than women, okay? And, you know, also maybe there's even an evolutionary component to this, is that skin is a little bit like armor. For men who are more likely to be engaged in, you know, warfare and combat. So maybe there's an evolutionary rationale for thicker skin in males. Is it possible to give women, older women testosterone? I generally don't like to do that unless they're already on, hormone replacement therapy that's balanced with estrogen and progesterone, and then we add a little bit of testosterone to complement that. But women can take DHEA, and DHEA may actually help to plump up the skin. You got to keep the skin well moisturized and protected by using a good moisturizing cream. Any suggestions? I like
I like coconut oil.
Coconut oil is good.
Mm-hmm. I like coconut oil. I think the daily ingestion of fish oil, borage oil is helpful. Mm-hmm. I think a lifetime use of collagen, meaning bone broths, homemade soup stocks, things of that nature.
Right.
It's helpful to skin, also to joints, to cartilage, and to, that could be helpful.
And also just in terms of, you know, bruising, we have to sometimes worry about some people taking too much fish oil. In some cases, ginkgo biloba, occasionally garlic can make skin more susceptible to bruising. What helps to reduce that is a higher intake of vitamin C and bioflavonoids.
Yes.
Bioflavonoids help to reduce this tendency for capillaries to be fragile.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay, Jean, best of luck to your mother. Thank you for your question.
At this point, let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts.
Wow.
And so, yeah, time flies. And obviously, we're having fun.
Yep.
What can we share with our audience in part two?
Oh, is there a way to cure genital HPV?
Okay. Let's tackle that in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist in residence. And this is Intelligent Medicine.